AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear headed, full of energy and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop once a day before breakfast and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting cock.
A camel chutney.
Hello and welcome to episode 16, season 10 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Today I'm joined on the line by Spooky.
All right. I love the flav pulls. When you say the season of the episode number, or the episode number of the season. It's tradition now, isn't it? You do that on purpose. You know what it is before you even record. It's on the running order. You know what it is, but you pretend you don't.
There's no running order. T doesn't do the second Backer. Episode of the week. We've also got John Bass.
All right, mate. I like the way that even if you had a running order, that Spook's point wasn't completely valid. you still do it wrong anyway.
Fair enough.
I'm good.
Can we concentrate on the fact that...
Sorry, I apologise.
No, it's fine. Vinicius is probably the best striker we've ever had. Spook, how did you rate his performance against last?
It was good. You know, you always want to see little signs that he isn't a complete jobber, that he's not a Roberto Soldado and he's just going to disappear. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he did the basics really well. And that touch and pass for Lucas to slot it home, little bits like that, you know he's got quality about him.
And it's not just that though, is it, Spook? The header to Son as well, which is more impressive in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's unlucky with his own header in front of goal, but that was probably just...
No, he wasn't unlucky, he was shit. That was just terrible, terrible effort. He should have done much better.
He overdid it. It wasn't a very instinctive reaction to the ball coming across, and it was probably easier to score than to miss. But
did you think when you saw that when he missed that header and he sunk to his knees and held his head in these hands, did you think, oh God, we've got a fucking dud here? Or did you think it's early days?
Yeah, I don't knee jerk that quickly. It'd take a lot more.
I did. I thought, oh God, what have we got here? What is this mess of a forward we've got, John? But he did come on and played an integral part of our success last night. And the two assists that he had, it really showed a quality. Because if Harry Kane had made the same assists, if Harry Kane had taken that ball on with his left foot and then put again with his left foot a ball into Lucas Moura where he couldn't miss, then we'd be doing flips about Harry Kane again. But the reality is that on his debut, Vinicius has
done all right, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done all right.
Mate, I guess like most people, I didn't know a lot about him. If I'm being truly honest,
you'd never heard of him. You pretty, no, every, mate, none of us had.
Like you, I thought it was the Real Madrid guy, and I was like, "Fucking hell, that's a bit." I thought he was a winger. but what has impressed me about him, which I just didn't really consider, like, and again, I guess this is a little bit kind of like narrative-driven stuff, which is like backup striker. And so you think about a backup striker as someone that's like, they're not going to do a lot other than like last 10 minutes or in shit games. And all they've got really is like, they're just going to be a bit of a lump maybe and try and get on the end of things and score like the odd goal. What I'm encouraged about in this very limited window of what I've seen so far is that he can actually play a little bit. And actually in the way that we're going to hopefully use him and need him where... he can play games instead of Kane, that he can play in a similar way to the way that Kane is being utilised now. Obviously not to the same level, but I think his link play was like way better than I thought it would be.
Me too,
and so
yeah.
Mate, if the goals come, then we have got not only like a good backup option, but we've got a nice alternative or in addition to Kane, which is not really what I was expecting. And again, I don't want to get carried away or knee-jerky for the miss, but positive, mate. Positive all round, I think.
Backup dancer. Yeah, and a backup dancer. That's the key thing, John. 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 John?
Is he gone? We lost him.
Oh, we have lost him. Maybe we'll get him back. Spook, what yes, did mate. You make, apart from the fact that he made those two assists, what did you make of his overall performance?
Yeah, just to continue... Where John was going with the whole having a backup striker. Like in our heads, we've always wanted someone to come in and just score the goals that Kane would be scoring if he was in the team.
Yeah.
But I think we're at this point now where we've got so many creative, forward-thinking players that run into the box, players that get on the end of crosses, players that play the 1-2s outside the box and then attack the return ball. There's so many options. What you actually need more than a backup striker is a backup striker, a striker that can play football, and he can play football. He's not going to get to prolific numbers, right? There's no chance he's going to do that because he's not going to be first team choice when Kane's playing in the big games. But he's going to allow Kane to sit on the bench. He'll come on, and he'll have someone around him, whether it's Lucas, whether it's Gareth Bale, whether it's maybe even Dele Alli at some point, having other intelligent players like Lo Celso in and around you means that they're gonna play the little disguised ball to feet. You're gonna do the same thing. So that's what you want to see. You want to see a bit of intelligence again. It comes back to the intelligence, the IQ levels of the players, and that they all are comfortable around each other. So yeah, in terms of a performance. Considering the game, Europa League, they're always a bit messy and untidy, not the same tempo as the Premier League. I could have asked for more. He could have scored. He didn't. He'd done enough. So I'm well chuffed.
He could have. He could have scored. But yeah, it just showed that he has more in his locker than I don't know. It felt like perhaps a Llorente performance. And if we can get back to a stage where we had Llorente as a backup striker who could influence the game when he played at the front of the line, or when Kane was injured, or could come on and offer something different, then that's all you're asking for. And that's what Vinicius did when he started that game yesterday. He was comfortable on both feet. He ran the channels relatively well when he had the opportunity. He also made space for himself. And when the ball was played into him and we asked for a bit of quality, he showed it. Yeah. And it's really hard. It's really hard for a player to come in as an understudy to Harry Kane, who is top five, you know, quality players in world football. For him to come to Tottenham and say, do you know what, I can do something here. I can further my career. Even if he doesn't become a mainstay at Tottenham, he can further his career by his efforts when he's on the pitch. And that's what I really, really loved about it. I put a tweet out, actually, just after the game saying, should we sell Harry Kane or sell Kane and with a picture of Vinicius? The amount of people that come back and thought I was serious was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. Are you sure? What who the fuck are you think? What are you thinking about, you mug? That's what I got. I've got loads of that. John?
Yeah, mate.
Gareth Bale started.
Yes.
Which was lovely to see. This is exactly where I think that he needs to be at this stage in his second spell at Tottenham. I thought he was excellent. I feel like that we give away something in terms of our defensive stability when he's on the pitch, because he isn't going to track back in the way that perhaps Lucas Moura will, or he won't run the kilometres that Lucas Moura will. But his quality on the ball was undeniable, and his assist for the own goal was superb. It's just so casual, so easy. What did you make of his performance overall?
Mate, really, really promising. I think it's nice to see him get minutes. You and I did the preview pod for the Patreons earlier in the week, and I said that I really wanted him to start because I think he just needs minutes. Like, he hasn't played a lot of football at all in the last few months, and so it was really good. And I think the difference when he came on against West Ham, like he did look rusty, and like I wasn't really concerned because of the fact he hasn't played much football. And I think this game really highlighted that quality is very much still there. Because in flashes, he just made what, you know, for other players would be quite difficult stuff look so ridiculously easy. And it's those like little flashes of quality that just kind of reminded me that when he does start to get his fitness and sharpness back, that we do really have like another top tier talent to kind of at our disposal, which is really exciting. So, mate, yeah, it was great. And also, just seeing him play for us in Europe again, it's just like, it's such a weird, I'm still not over it. It's still such a weird feeling. I am just like,
it is,
a, like,
it's
little
so sport. Weird. It's great, but it is also very, very strange. Spook. Well, I remember, you know, last time we spoke, Bale signed. But if you go back to the very throes of the Fighting Cock, the first two or three seasons where Gareth Bale was, he just came into the fore. So we started when Harry Redknapp was coach. And then it was AVB after Harry Redknapp. Is that right? No, Wander Ramos and then AVB. But we were at the beginning.
Other way around.
Yeah.
Ramos, Redknapp, AVB.
Right, my apologies. But in my head, what I'm trying to get at is the fact that in the formative stages of the Fighting Cock, Gareth Bale became very good.
Yeah.
And I remember a conversation. It was in my mum's front room. And that's where we used to record the podcast. And I was saying that Bale should stop shooting from distance. He should stop thinking. Do you remember this conversation? Speak.
Yeah. You do. I do, man. Yeah.
Wonderful. So I was saying he should stop shooting from distance. He should be more of a team player. Understand what his role is. Not, you know, and again, this shows my fucking idiocy constantly. Is that, Spook, you were going, no, let him play. Let him play. If he wants to do that, if he has that in his locker or he has that confidence that he's better than the situation he finds himself in, i.e. he can hit the target from distance where most players couldn't, then let him do it. What does it mean as a supporter who saw his potential before I did, for sure, but I'm sure other people as well, to see him come back. Do you find it strange to see him in the Spurs shirt again?
Yeah, it still feels like it's some kind of satirical documentary that we're watching. It's like part of a reality TV show that Gareth Bale's going to put a Tottenham shirt on and just walk around Hotspur Way and in the football stadium. And even when he's wearing the shirt and he's running around, it is surreal. It is strange. And it's not like we're all grown men, yeah, and they're footballers. Sometimes they come back to the club that they played for before. Yeah. But I guess we never really envisaged the day that would happen because... I mean, who goes to Real Madrid and then comes back to Tottenham? Like, after you've gone to Real Madrid and you've had the success you've had there, every summer when he got linked, you almost felt, oh, this is just media hype. But for him to actually come back and be so fucking genuinely happy...
It seems that way, doesn't it?
It's not... Yeah, he's not faking it. He's not like, God, well, I was playing golf for a year. I haven't played football for a year. I might as well take this because someone else came along. Could have gone China, but nah. It feels like he wants to... spark the football aspect of what he wants his legacy to be, especially coming back to Tottenham where he's loved. He doesn't just want to come back, earn a bit of money, escape Madrid. But taking all that into maybe all of that has almost consumed us in accepting that he's back, because we can't go to games. You know, he can't soak up the atmosphere of having supporters sing his name. We can't be there to see him live in the flesh. Maybe that's added to the surrealism of it all. And yeah, he's back. He's not the Gareth Bale yet. He will never be the same player. Obviously, age fucks you up. But you know, when he's fit, and it might be another month, he's going to offer so much. His footwork already, in cameos. Do you know what I mean? Go back to the footballing IQ thing. He will win us games. He will score important goals. He will probably do a lot more than we actually expect. Because I've seen a lot of people saying, well, he's not really the same type of player, but it's great to have him back. And I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, the guy has been walking around a golf course for a year. Give it time. Be patient. Enjoy this moment, because when he's at full pelt, we'll have moments where it'll be like the old Gareth Bale, and that's more than enough. Having that edge. Well,
it was that what you said. The crux of what you just said there is exactly the same as what you said back in the day. Is that just enjoy this, let him play, let him, you know, influence a game in the way that he knows how to, and we'll get benefits from it. We will. Yeah. And you know, like, people that talk about, you know, we're not signing the Gareth Bale that we sold. He was 24, 25. He wasn't even formed. He knows so much more about the game now than he did when he left Tottenham.
Oh, the experience.
The experience is one thing, but he's won 4 Champions League trophies. I don't know how many Copa del Reys, maybe one. He's won the league. He's done it all. He's achieved. He's at the very top of what most players will ever achieve in club football. For him, for fans to and I don't think there's many Spurs fans that think this way, but there's fans of other clubs that think this way. If they think that we don't have a quality football here, not just quality, like Lo Celso's quality, Gareth Bale is elite, like, there would be 0.1% of professional footballers who somehow managed to play the game at a level that we could never even imagine us playing at would achieve what Gareth Bale has achieved already. So for him to come in a football sphere where players are playing for longer, they are the a peak age of 29 is now 30 or 31. The fact that Gareth Bale might be at his peak right now is inconceivable to fans outside of Tottenham, because they hunker down on the idea that Gareth Bale isn't going to be progressive as a footballer for Tottenham. And I think, as a complete fan base, we're going to witness something that is completely contrary to all of the ideas of fans from other football clubs. But what I want to do right now, John, is I want to give some praise to Ben Davies, who played in a back four on the left-hand side of defence as a centre-back, because Reguilón played at left-back or left wing-back, and Davies played on the left side of a centre-back pairing, and I thought he did fantastically well. Is there any world But given the fact that the left hand side of our defence is somewhat suspect, because Dyer, he does the job well, isn't left footed, nor is Alderweireld, and Sanchez isn't either, that perhaps Davies could do it because he's left sided and it feels natural to him. What do you think of his performance last night? And what do you think about the idea that he could potentially be one of our centre back pairings in the future?
So I don't think it's like as mad as it would sound at first, like kind of first hearing it, because I think initially when he was like signed for us, he'd really at that time had only ever played left back. Then he'd like played in a three for Wales. And so there was like talk of, well, you know, he could probably do a job for us in a three if he had to on the left. And he did that a couple of times and with like, you know, fairly successful performances. So it is only like one more step to be like, okay, maybe you can play in a two. That being said, that step is quite big. Like, you don't have the same level of protection. You are a little bit more exposed. There is that little bit more responsibility as like the centre back instead of like a full back. But all of that being said, him being a natural left footer, he is actually pretty decent in the air considering his like size. Yeah. And I think he's much more a defender than he is like an attacking fullback. And we have one of the most exciting attacking fullbacks in Europe now. So it kind of is like, it's ticking a lot of boxes for me, mate. I'm kind of here for it, if I'm being honest, because it's not like the others are completely bathing themselves in any glory, right? Let's be honest, we would not be having this conversation if our back four was absolutely solid and we weren't conceding goals. We wouldn't be going, oh, maybe you could use Davies there. We're thinking that way because it's not working. And sometimes like you have to try something a little bit different.
Yeah, you do. And I think this was never a discussion when we had Vertonghen in the squad. He was left-sided. And I think this feels like the first time in many a year, or if ever, where football fans or Spurs fans, when looking at our own club, are thinking about how important it is to have a left-sided player playing on the left-hand side of the centre-back pairing, where previously you just thought there's two centre-backs, whether they're left foot, right foot, it doesn't matter. But it does feel like whatever the system we're playing, it suits better that there is someone who's really confident on their left foot. And Dyer is, but it's not his natural position, is it? So, Davies did well against Lask, and part of his limitation is about going forward, so he doesn't have to do that as a centre back. But it could be that if he played against a really decent forward line, that he'd get found out. But we've got to try. We've got to experiment somewhat, haven't we, Spook?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've got the players. What we haven't got is the balance or the right level of a coherent back four. But at the same time, there's so many games. You almost need them to be adaptable. You need them to be able to flex at the back a little bit. But you'd like to think there is a top back line that will play most of the games, especially in the Premier League.
But Spook, can I just stop you for a second? Because we had a question from on Twitter. It says, it's from THFC_fan1882. We've read these questions out before, and that there is not a more Tottenham Twitter handle than that. But answer this. Thoughts on Davies as centre-back? Seems like one of the best options to play alongside Dyer. Is Dyer and Davies something that you're going to be confident about if we go up against Chelsea or Arsenal?
Probably not.
So what if it isn't them two? What is our best centre back pairing?
This is the problem, mate. I have to pause and then think about it, and that's not a good sign. Like, once upon a time, you say Jan and Toby, and you wouldn't blink, you wouldn't stutter, you just roll off the tongue, and it's done. And you'd know that you'd have confidence in both of them because you've got a Bentley playing alongside a Rolls Royce. It's, you know, at their peak, they were amazing footballers. But at the minute, you're looking at Sanchez, who was bought as a rough, kind of like a rough diamond. And you're thinking, yeah, if he improves in these areas, but there's still question marks around his composure and his decision making, his positioning sometimes, which all important traits to be like a commanding centre back. So I couldn't tell you. It's one of those things where at the minute I've accepted that no one can really defend that well. So let's make sure we don't defend as badly as everyone else around us. And as long as we're scoring, we're likely to win most of the games that we play. And in amongst all of that, if Davies ends up being consistent at the back and commanding at the back, then he deserves to keep his place. But long term, we've got a new guy that was signed, and we'll probably still be looking for another centre back. So I think there are changes to be had over the next season or two at the back.
It kind of feels like that in terms of our transfer policy, it's not about like thinking about the feelings of the players that currently exist in the squad. It's just about the betterment of Tottenham Hotspur. And I think as fans, we all get attached to certain players. Like Dele Alli isn't getting the time on the pitch that you think his talent should warrant. But if you sign players in a squad and you build a squad, then you have to earn the right to play.
Mm.
And one of the most impressive things that Pochettino ever said was, you're not coming here to play, you're coming here to train. And there's a sweet or bitter irony, depending on how you feel about Pochettino or Mourinho, is the fact that it's probably more evident now than it ever has been. Like, Dele Alli should be getting in our side, but he isn't, and we're still performing well. And I'll say that, given the fact that we conceded 3 goals to West Ham, which was, I agree with Mourinho, was a freak result. It was a freak accident. It was so hard to deal with, but it was like in the same way that Lanzini's goal was a 99 out of 100 times it wouldn't have gone in, 99 out of 100 games we wouldn't have drawn that. It was just one of those games. I just feel like there is that this is about Tottenham as a football club now rather than about individual players and a project. What do you make of that, John?
Well, yeah, it's like Jose said it, like, I don't know if it was end of last season or like when he first started, that he was being asked about players not being selected. And he's like, you don't ask this of like Pep Guardiola, this of Klopp. And that, I think, is like a testament to where he wants to take us and where he sees us, which is like, why does it matter that the club of this stature, Tottenham Hotspur players are all of a stature, but they all should be like included in the squad or in the starting 11 and all could potentially not make it. That's what we're striving for. And so it is like, it's funny. And I think that we, you know, as fans, like you kind of have a desired first 11, but ultimately like the manager and the training staff and all of those that are responsible for picking that side, they see those players like day in, day out. And if they don't think that they can contribute to the team, and whether that's just about, you know, the work rate and or talent, then it's up to them to make that decision. They see it. I mean, there's like, for me, it's a really like simple way to look at it, which is that there are players in our squad who are nowhere near as talented as a footballer, just purely on a artistic, beautiful technique level. There are players who aren't as technically gifted as Dele Alli. We know that play regularly in a very similar position. Granted, not the same position. And I'm thinking of Sissoko, right? We all know Sissoko's limitations, but you would, as a manager, you would pick Sissoko ahead of Dele Alli because you know he will give you a certain amount of effort and a certain amount of things that you can rely on. And I think like in this instance, in the Dele instance, or with any player, it's like that those like managers, especially the elite ones, like they have to be ruthless with what they want and what they expect. And if you're not doing that, you're not showing them that you can give them what they want, you will get left out. And I think that as the club moves forward and as the playing side moves forward, I think we all have to like deal with that a little bit, that players that were our favourites that were guaranteed to start might get bombed out for a little bit. And that's actually okay as long as the club is moving forward, mate. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, well, we've got a question from your coach on Twitter. He says, when was the last time you saw a healthy Harry Kane sit on a bench for 90 minutes of any contest?
Yeah.
Speak. I don't think there are... I can't remember a time, unless a game meant... unless the game meant nothing, he says, of any contest, so that would suggest there was something riding on the result. It just hasn't happened.
Seeing him sat there, relaxing, chilling, day, night off. You know what I mean?
He doesn't want it, though, does he? He wants to be on.
He wants. This is the thing about Kane. He wants records. He wants to score. He wants to retain his form, a sense of momentum. But we are all wary of the fact that because of that energy, because of that determination, even for running into to kind of try and take the ball away from a midfielder, it's in those moments that he snaps something and he gets injured. Yeah. You know, yeah. And it's almost like
he's driving towards his own personal goals, which will help Spurs immeasurably.
Yeah,
but the reality is, we don't need you to do that.
Exactly. Just don't. It's just one game in a season of many games. You're going to miss this one. You're better off missing one or two here and there than missing 15, because if you miss 15, then we ain't going to reach the levels that we need to be reaching. And obviously, his legacy, and his career, and his value, and everything. I mean, look, I need to explain how footballers feel when they're injured and they're out for prolonged periods of time. But even though we've now got backups and we've got options and we've got versatility and the rest of it, we need our best players fit and protected, and we're in a position to do that. So it's good that I'm hoping that he sat there last night thinking, for fuck's sake, because then he'll play against Burnley and he's going to come out and do what he does.
He's fresh. So, like, for the first time, as the question alluded to, is this the first time where we've played a European game and he hasn't had to feature it? Not that he could have featured, he could have done well. And he, you know, against sort of minor opposition as Lask were, you know, he probably could have played and coasted and it would have been fine. But we didn't have to risk him. Vinicius came in, he'd done an incredible job, as we talked about at the top of the show. And now he just goes into this Burnley game on Monday thinking, do you know what? I'm ready. I'm firing. I'm rested. I've had a week off. Harry Kane with a week off football is a better Harry Kane with 3 days off football. And that's wonderful, because he's going to be in training. He would have been in where players play a game and they get a day off. Harry Kane would have been in training. He'd have been getting to a point where he is match sharp.
Mm.
And now we've got a Harry Kane who's desperate again to play to and realise that there's someone else in this squad that can play. Like Llorente, as much as we love him, he was never gonna. There was never any chance of him usurping Harry Kane for his starting berth. And there's no real chance that Vinicius is going to do that. But he also knows that Vinicius, when he plays, will do what's necessary from a backup striker. And if Harry Kane gets injured, then we've got a player there, it seems, after only 90 minutes of football, that will come on and you know, do something effective. So I feel like we're in a good situation here with Harry Kane. Like he hasn't had to play this shitty little Europa League game, and he can go into a game that actually matters against Burnley, given the fact we've won our away game against Man United, but we've also drawn, unfortunately, against Newcastle, drawn, unfortunately, against West Ham. But over a course of a season, those unfortunate results play out, and the reality is that you don't often end up on the end of an unfortunate result. So Harry Kane can go into this game against Burnley, John, with, like, full of beans.
Mate, he's going to... the thing about him, right, is on the surface, he's like, I'm Harry Kane. I'm going to go down as a Tottenham legend. I'm going to break all the records. I'm not worried. It's great that he can play a few games. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But deep down, in the back of his mind, in the pit of his stomach, he will be thinking, I'm going to show this cunt who's the best.
That's exactly what we want.
That's exactly what we want, mate. And it will just give him, even if it's 1%, extra on what he's had the last couple of years where he hasn't had any competition. Because let's be honest, like, it's not like he's had no competition, he's taken his foot off the gas. He's given everything he can give. But this is like, I don't know, it just feels like that this will give him that little bit of edge of like, I'm going to prove it. Like, even though he doesn't really need to, he's going to try. And if that gives us a little bit of extra and he gets a rest in between, fucking hell, like, we could see another level to Kane this season, across the season, which is ridiculous that I'm even suggesting that. But yeah, we'll see.
We got a question from Luke Wishelder. Luke Wishelder. And he said, with a picture of, do you remember Bully? Do you remember Bully from Arsenal Fan TV? Just a geezer look like a pirate.
Oh, the pirate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he says, seeing as he is now mathematically the most clinical striker in the Premier League, I think mathematically might mean the assists and goals. Obviously over Shearer, because I don't think, he's not mathematically the best striker. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He said, whose name is Harry Kane? So you remember this video that Bully from Arsenal Fan TV said, whose name is Harry Kane? And this is like 2014, where Harry Kane then dished up a, I think he scored two, or at least one. We've never seen that geezer again. Where is he? do you know what I think a part of it was? Is that I remember speaking to Robbie, who I know on a professional level. I don't know him as a mate. We're not mates or anything like that. But there was a time where Bully, this geezer, the pirate geezer, was talking, maybe it might have been whose name's Harry Kane, but he was going to North London Derby at White Hart Lane. And there was a hashtag on Spurs Twitter saying slap Bully. If you get him, if you find him, give him a slap. And apparently that was the last we ever saw of him.
It's a wonderful thing. He's probably in hiding in Greg's or
what was he doing? That was the other thing. Apex Triplets, he says, is Joe Hart actually all right as a backup compared to Gazzaniga? What do you make of Joe Hart's inclusion so far? I've thought he looked really, really comfortable. Really comfortable. There is no part of me who thinks I'm a little bit anxious about Joe Hart playing. And that's strange given the fact that he's, you know, in his recent years, he's made a lot of clangers. Burnley let him go. We picked him up. We've made him definitely our number two. And he's not disappointed at all. John, what do you make of that?
Well, so I was watching on a, I guess an illegal stream. I'll just say it. There we go. I've added myself. I watched the game with no crowd noise for the first time since lockdown. Most of the time I've gone for the crowd noise option. I didn't have the option this time. And one thing that was really noticeable was Joe Hart's level of communication to the other players was really noticeable and really like, for me anyway, like filled me with a lot more confidence than I think I would have had otherwise, because he was like marshalling players around, like getting the lads going. And like, again, I know that's sort of like frowned upon as like, oh, it's just like old football man, like theories of how stuff works. But it was noticeable that he was like communicating with the back four, which I think is really important. Prior to that, I'd seen a lot of training videos where he's getting absolutely done and he's not getting his hand on anything. And I was like, oh, shit, we've properly signed a little like Sunday league keeper who's like 5 foot and should not be going in goal because everything's just going in the top bin. Yeah. But he's done all right. He's actually done pretty well. So I'm kind of more confident than I was. I thought he was coming in to be the third choice. Looks like he's coming in to be the second choice. And if he's performs well and is like maybe the confidence of like being at a club like Spurs and feeling like he's back in the big time raises his level, then we've got a really, really good understudy, which is what we want, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nick, what do you
mean? Whoa, government name.
Oh, sorry. Spooky.
I don't think you've ever even called me that in person.
I don't know where it came from. I'm just
it's
spooky.
Fucking hell. Blame
T. Listen, spook. Joe Hart, right? I like a story that, you know, if you look at where he's come from, right? I mean,
so sorry about that, mate.
But you look at where he's come from in terms of form and even mental health. I mean, we all know that goalkeepers, when they do fuck up, it's really, really difficult for them to kind of dig themselves out because they're scapegoated, they're replaced. And I never really looked at Joe Hart and thought, yeah, he could do a job for Tottenham. However, I guess the leadership quality, the experience, the fact that he's obviously loud, big personality, believes in what he says. You need leaders. You need people with experience in and around the other players in order to kind of show them a benchmark, a level to kind of inspire. We've always had captains, but a lot of our captains have been quite they've led by example. They've been like Ledley Keane wasn't a shouty type of captain. Joe Hart isn't a captain, but he does a job in there. That's vocally, in terms of ability, he can get away with a Europa League game. He might get away with some other games here and there, but in terms of Premier League quality, if you then compare him to Hugo, he's just not on that same level. So he would worry me in a big, big game if he had to play. But I'm just Nick, sorry, Spooky, sitting here with a fucking opinion. If Jose Mourinho has made him number two, and we all thought he was going to be number three, right? He was only going to come in for the vocals, for the noise that he can make in the dressing room. But he's gone in at number two. If Jose Mourinho's got the confidence to back him and believe in the guy, and the guy can regain his confidence, and he can do a job as a number two. Because let's admit it, we've never really been happy with whatever number two we've got. And perhaps that's just the way football is. You're going to have a top-class number one goalkeeper who's going to play predominantly most of the matches. Your number two is never going to be that quality. It's going to be maybe a young guy from the academy or a young up-and-coming goalkeeper. And we always slag off the players that we've had in that number two role. But maybe the reality is that's the level of the number two role. It's whether you believe that Hart really is a number two or he's a number three pretending to be a number two. So I'm happy that Mourinho has confidence in him, because for now I'm going to trust in that and see where it takes us.
Spook, I literally love hearing you talk about football. Honestly,
really?
I talk about football to so many people. When you talk about it, it's like, this is great. This is a good sport. Spooky agrees. Sorry, mate. I just wanted to say that.
Beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah, mate. I'm just sitting here just going, this is, I'm really enjoying this pod. And I'm like, oh no, I'm on it as well. This is just really great to listen to.
So Spooky stopped speaking. I'm like, oh fuck, shit, I need something else. I've got to go move. Yeah. I've got to move forward. Okay, I think we're going to end the podcast on a question from Grant Allop. And he says, Højbjerg is seen as our most important signing in terms of the team setup and the position we needed. What do you make of that? Like, because he has been superb. And it's not superb in the same way that Gareth Bale would have been superb if he scored a hat-trick last night. It's not the explosiveness of a new signing. It's someone who comes in and goes, right, I know what to do here. Don't everybody relax. This is fine. You're all doing good jobs. I'm just coming in and make a situation where you can be your best selves. That's what he's like. He's like a fucking self-help guru. Go on, John. What do you make of Højbjerg's performances thus far? And that's not even, we don't even need to talk about the fact that he came on after gashing his eye.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with him, mate, is like, we needed like that position, right? Regardless of the profile of player, we needed someone who could play in that holding position, six, whatever you want to call it, right? And so I was like, well, finally, we've just got someone to play in that position. The thing that I didn't consider, which is the thing that we were talking a little bit about Joe Hart was, is that all the like intangible stuff that he's brought that I'm just loving at the moment, encapsulated in that moment where I think like Reggie wins the ball back and he's like standing behind him, just like cheering him forward as he like brings the ball out of defence.
Wasn't Reggie, it was Aurier. But
Aurier, okay, sure. But I just love like this mentality for him of like, he is that kind of quintessential like winner at all costs. And again, like the way he like smashes his face up and he's like, get me back on there, I want to get back out there type mentality. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
That is the sort of stuff that like we need. When people say, oh, there's no backbone, there's no spine, you know, you need leaders out there, like he encapsulates all that stuff. All of that being said, he's also really fucking good as well. Like,
yeah,
he's big, but he's actually quite mobile.
He's completed the most passes in the Premier League this season.
Doesn't surprise me at all, because he's really good in terms of like getting the ball. And again, a lot of the reasons that people dislike Winks in that position is they see him as like someone who passes sideways, and a lot of players who play there do that because they want to be like keep the, you know, consistency of keeping the ball moving. But he passes forward a lot, like a lot more than a player in that position that I've seen for a long time. And that is one of the reasons that we're like, I think we're scoring a lot of goals, is because he's like moving the ball forward so quickly through the lines. just everything about it. I love the cut of his jib, everything about him. I love the fact I can't pronounce his name properly. I love that he's got mad tattoos. Like, everything about him, I'm into, mate, right now.
Cool. So he's well up there, isn't he, in our estimations. And we can't pronounce his name. It's Højbjerg is the correct way to pronounce it. And this is from someone who doesn't pronounce any. I can't even. My dad's name's David, and I fuck it up 30% of the time. But I know his name's Højbjerg, but people call him Højbjerg. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. The fact is, we've got a defensive midfielder who is essentially. Defensive midfielder is too dismissive of what he does. He's Harry Winks, but with meat and a brain. That's what it feels like. Speak.
Yeah, I love him. And
all right.
Whoa.
No, that's enough from you. That's enough from you.
What?
No, go on, carry on, speak.
No, I was gonna say. Fucking hell. Sorry, man. I thought you were gonna do the classic, just cut off and end the pod on me talking.
Oh, I should do it now. If I was gonna do it, I'd do it now. But I'm not gonna do that.
I don't trust you.
No, I won't. Go on.
it'd be even more perfect just after me and Flav just been going, mate, we just love hearing you talk about football. It's nothing better than hearing you talk. And then you're like, yeah, I love him. Bang.
Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.